You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Journalist Alison Moore has built a glittering career on fighting for the underprivileged and underrepresented. A former television news anchor, she's since hosted and reported for shows such as Fair Go, Breakfast and Seven Sharp, and more recently co-hosted Radiolive's Drive programme. Since February of this year, she's led a team of journalists at Stuff.co.nz investigating sexual harassment nationwide as part of the hashtag MeToo movement. I spoke with Ali this morning to talk about her work looking into abuses of power and started by asking her whether the ongoing Kavanaugh trial in America is the sort of story that inspires her to keep investigating stories affecting women.
Oh yeah, because it's hard work and it's sometimes very discouraging work and it's really emotional work too, because every day there are new stories coming in and every single one is a story of damage in some respect. You know, some people, a lot of women, mostly women, some men of course, have actual diagnoses of mental health issues like PTSD. It's been a big surprise actually, the number of diagnosed cases as a result of sexual harassment. But there's also people who've lost their jobs or lost their career advancement. And it's a litany of woe, really. And it's everywhere in this country. And that can start to, you know, get you down, particularly when you think, am I making any progress? Or is this issue just slipping out of the, you know, off the front pages? One of the reasons why I set up the Me Too Project here at Stuff was particularly to keep this issue on the home pages of New Zealand websites for as long and as often as I could. Very high-profile events internationally, like the Cosby sentencing and like the Kavanaugh hearings, are encouraging.
So you mentioned that one of the reasons that inspired you to do this was to keep it relevant. How did you come to decide that this was what you wanted to focus on?
I've been writing about these issues for quite a while, a few years now, and speaking about them. You know, on the radio show that I had and in my column. It was quite a regular topic even before Me Too, along with pay equality and other, you know, issues of equity. And so when the whole Me Too thing blew up, when the Weinstein revelations came out in October, I was riveted and I read everything I could get my hands on about it. And then an ex-colleague of mine in Australia, a very senior broadcaster, Tracy Spicer, who ironically worked with me as young reporters. We worked together at Channel 9 in 1993 under the worst sexual harasser, the head of news, that I ever encountered in my life. She wrote about him in her book, actually. She set up an investigation in Australia into the media and entertainment industries. And she had 400 responses within a day. And this was late October, so just a few weeks after Weinstein. And I was fascinated, so I got her on my radio show and interviewed her about it. And then afterwards, we were just having a chat and a bit of a catch-up, because I hadn't seen her in 25 years. And she said, Ali, you need to do the same thing in New Zealand. And I thought about it right over the summer. And because I assumed that Me Too, the international movement, would have some kind of formal pickup here in New Zealand, I didn't for a moment have the naivety to think that we don't have a problem with sexual harassment here. And a lot of our critics have been that naive, I'll point out.
Yes.
but I thought, am I the one to do it? You know, if somebody does something formally, then I'll be right there behind them helping. And by February, when the Russell McVeigh story broke through the fantastic work of Mel Reid at Newsroom, I realised that if somebody was going to do it, it was going to have to be me. So I had the opportunity to elevator pitch the idea to Sinead Boucher when you've got 30 seconds, basically.
Yes.
She poked her head into a meeting room, into a meeting that I was having on a completely different matter with Stuff, And I begged her to sit down for a minute, and she just looked at me and said, I kind of gabbled out my idea, and she looked at me and she said, yes, not how much is it going to cost or how long will it take, or she just said, yes, do it. So, I was given the support, and still am given the support, to run a team of 6 reporters. And we have other reporters coming in and out on various projects as well. I run it, and the decisions are mine with the support of 2 very senior editorial directors, Patrick Crudson and John O'Mill.
Have you been at all surprised at the reaction you've had, or the number of people you've had come forward to you since this started in February?
One of the team did ask me early on, how many responses do you think we'll get? Because like Tracy's Vice's investigation in Australia, we decided that we'd launch it on social media, and we gave people various options of ways that they could contact me. And I'm like the clearinghouse, so all the responses come to me, and then I feed them out to our team, and we all discuss them at weekly meetings and all that. And I wasn't really able to answer them. I said, I don't know, we could get 5 or we could get 1,500. In the end, we got 150 in a day.
Wow.
And we've ended up with, I mean, I actually have lost count, but it must be, because there's new stories coming in all the time.
Mm.
So it must be 400, I would say, by now.
Do you think the movement as a whole has been a success?
I think it's been an enormous success. I mean, you can't, much as we would like to, you can't change the world in a day or in 6 months. But I think that, for example, if you take the hearings that are going on in Washington right now, I do think that before Me Too, Ford's testimony would have been dismissed. Well, she might not even have got to testify, you know. She might have... There might have been the sense that, oh, look, you know, it's a bit late in the nomination process and we're just going to push it through because who knows whether it happened or not. I think there has been progress in allowing women to tell their stories. Unfortunately, it seems that very few people are yet approaching the issue from a let's believe the woman first and then work from there. But I think we have made progress, yeah. I think it's been enormously helpful to the way women feel about themselves and their own experiences.
Mm.
We've had one woman who's had just a terrible time. Her email, 4 pages long, came in on the night we launched, and we've been working on it for 5 months.
Wow.
And we've Michelle Duff wrote the story. She published it just a couple of weeks ago, and we had an email from her the night before we published the story, and she just said, "Thank you for giving me a voice." She said, "I've had 4 years of hiding, really, and trauma, and you have given me permission to step into my story and stand in it without fear."
Mm.
And, I mean, if I never get another email response like that, that will be enough thanks for me, you know?
Yeah.
So, I do think that Me Too has given women the kind of permission to speak that they never had before. So, you know, so yes, it's been enormously helpful.
At the UN today, the Prime Minister said that Me Too must become We Too. What do you make of that?
I do agree with her. There is always discussion amongst some some of the feminist collective that this is a women's story only. I don't think that's true. We've had responses from men as well, but also a lot of the work on this has to be done by men. Most of the perpetrators are men. Therefore, we need men to embrace this change as well and say things like, okay, the next time I see my workmates making inappropriate jokes or targeting that drunk girl at the Christmas party, I am going to step in. Now, that's a really hard thing to do, and what you are risking is being ridiculed or ostracised by your workmates for doing the right thing. I know, you know, God, I'm not, honestly, human beings. But that's what we need men to do. We need men to stand up for women as well as women standing up for women.
Was there ever a time where you questioned whether using Me Too was the right thing or whether it was better just to deal with these issues without that branding almost? That's trying to get to what I'm questioning.
No, I think that the branding is incredibly important, and I would not want to disown it by any means, because just that hashtag has been enormously helpful for so many women who, you know, millions of women haven't had to give all the details of their story if they find that that's too confronting and too personal. They could just post hashtag Me Too and they can feel part of a collective, you know, part of a sisterhood, if you like. Mm. So, no, I don't think we could chuck that out. And I certainly have never even crossed my mind that it was a disadvantage, because and the reason it never crossed my mind is because I know how powerful it has been to so many women.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.